Okay, welcome in everybody to episode 5 of the Beastlore podcast, a podcast about cryptid creatures, monsters, and the things that may or may not be hiding in the shadows. I'm your host, Jack Daly. Today we are going to be traveling to the Scottish Highlands and to the castle-clad shores of Loch Ness, where legend has it an aquatic monster is lurking beneath the dark waters. When lakes, monsters, and Scotland are brought up, we can only be talking about one thing. Loch Ness Monster. On today's episode, I'm going to tell you about the history of the Loch Ness Monster. I'll cover some of the most famous sightings, which include photographic and video evidence, and I'll try to provide some explanations for what the Loch Ness Monster is. So Aldous Huxley, in his essay Heaven and Hell, says that, like the Earth of 100 years ago, our mind still has its darkest Africas, its unmapped Borneos and Amazonian basins. In relation to the fauna of these regions, we are not yet zoologists. We are mere naturalists and collectors of specimens. He goes on to say that, like the giraffe and the duck-billed platypus, the creatures inhabiting these remoter regions of the mind are exceedingly improbable. Nevertheless, they exist. They are facts of observation, and as such, they cannot be ignored by anyone who is honestly trying to understand the world in which he lives. So what he is saying here is that the mind, like the undiscovered regions of the world, are full of creatures beyond imagination. This is what Huxley refers to as the antipodes of the mind. Some say that space is the last frontier, but it's really not. The oceans and the lakes of Earth are. We don't know what we're going to find there. And when you study cryptozoology, you are journeying to the antipodes of both the mind and of Earth. And in the case of the Loch Ness Monster, you travel to the depths of Earth's greatest undiscovered realm, the waters. The Loch Ness Monster, or Nessie as it's also called, is probably alongside Sasquatch one of the first things that comes to mind when cryptozoology is mentioned. The werewolf and vampire are perhaps more associated with Hollywood. And there hasn't been a great Nessie or Sasquatch movie made yet. And, you know, I think that that might be the reason why Sasquatch and the Loch Ness Monster are more the face of the study of cryptozoology, more so than things like the vampire and werewolf, who are more staples of popular culture. But at least for me, you know, when I think of cryptozoology, Sasquatch and Nessie are two of the main things that come to my mind. So this is the first non-anthropomorphic creature that I've covered on this podcast. And if you'll remember back, anthropomorphism is basically a human-like features, human-like characteristics. But the Loch Ness Monster really has no relation to the human form. And it's actually believed to exist. But unlike some of these other creatures like the vampire, who is believed to exist, Nessie isn't said to be supernatural, mainly. You know, it's posited to be an actual creature that's very firmly planted on the physical plane, as opposed to something even like the Sasquatch. So to give you a brief description of what the Loch Ness Monster is, what it looks like. It's said to have sleek, rubbery, blackish skin. It's said to be about 20 feet long with a serpentine body. Supposedly it has a set of paddles on its side that it used to swim. It's often said to have a horse-shaped head, and it may have a mane actually coming down from this head. Occasionally, sightings are associated with small horns or antennae that come off of its head. Sometimes it's said to have a turtle-like head that's rounded as opposed to the horse-like head. It's said to have at least 2 humps, a tail, and a gaping red mouth. And it's said to live in Loch Ness. So Loch Ness is located in northern Scotland, And it's one of a series of interlinked locks which run along the Great Glen. And if you don't know, loch is the word that they use for lake. So it's a giant lake. It's located on the Great Glen. And the Great Glen is a fault zone. And it's a strike-slip fault. So a strike-slip fault is horizontal, and it runs parallel to the fault line. So if you put your hands together and you slide one up above the other one, that's what happens to the earth in a strike slip fault. And that leads to, it can lead to stuff like volcanic activity and, you know, basically disturbances within the earth. And Loch Ness is the largest freshwater lake in Great Britain. It's 22 miles long. It's 1 mile wide and 754 feet deep. It was created approximately 250 million years ago, is when this strike slip fault was created. During Pangaea, when you know all of the continents were connected, Scotland was actually probably located more where Australia's latitude is today. And it crossed the equator during the time of the dinosaurs. And Scotland was enveloped in ice during the Ice Age, which ended approximately 12,000 years ago. And so is the lake. So the lake had existed, but it was like, you know, the area had existed, but it was covered in ice during the Ice Age. And so anything that is living inside of it must have arrived from the North Sea up the River Ness after the final retreat of the ice between 10 and 12,000 years ago. It had to have come in after that. So that eliminates some candidates of what might be, you know, the cause of the Loch Ness Monster, such as reptiles, amphibians, and invertebrates. After the Ice Age ended, the land around Loch Ness was completely barren, and then vegetation came in, and that led to animals such as wolves, beavers, bears, and elk coming in, and all of those are not present in the location anymore. And then around the 6th century is when the Scots came in, and it had already been somewhat inhabited by the Picts, who were the indigenous people of Scotland. So a lot of this episode is going to be going over the history of Loch Ness Monster sightings, because that's really what, you know, consists the main basis of the Loch Ness, you know, sort of story, is really the sightings that are associated with it. Not so much the beliefs and the folklore, which you can do an entire episode about basically vampires or werewolves, which is what I did. But it's really more the sightings that have been occurring. So the first real thing in history that's associated with the Loch Ness Monster was in the 6th century AD. There was an individual named Saint Columba who reportedly had the earliest sighting of the Loch Ness Monster that has lived on in history. So this was actually written down by an individual named Adomnan, 1 century after the life of Saint Columba, in, you know, basically the saint's life sort of text that was gathered. That often what would happen, a saint would be alive, and then years later somebody would write down sort of their life story. And he was an Irish saint who was staying by the River Ness with the pagan Picts, and they were performing a burial. And he went over and asked them what was going on, and they said that the man had been attacked by a water beast that had mauled him and dragged him under the river. And Saint Columba had one of his followers swim through the river, and the beast ended up coming after him. But then Columba made a sign of the cross and said, "Go no further, do not touch the man, go back at once." And it was said that the beast halted as if pulled back with ropes. So this is what lives on with us through this Saint's life story that was compiled a century later. And I mean, oftentimes with these things, it's a way to sort of glorify the power of the church and to try and, you know, get people to believe that, oh, if you go along with this path, then you'll be able to protect yourself from water monsters and stuff like that. So to me, it sort of reeks of church propaganda, and it's kind of a little bit of a disgusting demonstration of the supposed superiority that the church had over the pagans. Some other criticisms that people have is that these water beast stories are common in medieval saints' lives, and that it was basically a recycling of a common motif that was attached to a local landmark that was in these stories. And these things really might be totally unconnected, but it's attached in retrospect by believers in Nessie to bolster their claims and say, oh, look, it goes back to, you know, the 6th century A.D., but I really think that this first sort of encounter is not the greatest starting point, because legends of Nessie really didn't resurface until about 1,300 years later. So again, you know, I'm always very interested to see how far these legends stretch back. Are they actually thought to be, you know, really in existence, or, you know, what is the history of this creature? So the Loch Ness Monster phenomena actually is only about 80 years old, which is in starch contrast. Is it stark or starch contrast? Either one, I don't know. It's in contrast to werewolf and vampire beliefs, which are very, very, very old. And the first sighting that really kicked off the Nessie phenomena was in April of 1933, an individual witnessed Nessie basically in the water, and in May 2nd of 1933 in the Inverness Courier, there was a story that was published about it, and this individual's sighting was kind of, you know, recapped, and it was said that they saw an enormous animal rolling and plunging on the surface of Loch Ness. And in 1933, there was actually a road being built out around Loch Ness. And so that's really when the sightings started picking up. They coincided with this road being built. And, I mean, I don't think that that's a coincidence. And, I mean, I've been kind of driving around, the sort of more remote areas of Colorado and Utah recently. And that's been sticking out to me, is really how much land is out there. And I mean, you know, we think that, I started off this episode saying, you know, we think that space is the last frontier, but it's not. The oceans and the water are the last frontier, because we haven't mapped those fully either. But there's also a lot of land out there. I mean, I think that people who, you know, maybe grow up in a city or something like that are like, oh, we've figured everything out. Like, everything is taken up already. But I mean, come out to the west, man, and you'll see that there's a lot of land and a lot of space out there where, you know, who knows what really is out there. So there's still things to be discovered, and I mean, I think it's possible that lake monsters exist. I mean, water is especially like Loch Ness has dark water. You can't exactly tell what's really down there, and it's a vast, vast area. We still don't have quite the technology to map it all out. So May 2nd, 1933 is when the Loch Ness Monster phenomena really kicked off. And later on in that year, in July 22nd, is when George Spicer and his wife saw an animal cross the road in front of their car. They described it as having a very large body. They said it was 4 feet high and 25 feet long, with a long, narrow neck. And, you know, journalists went out there, and this is really when it started becoming a worldwide phenomenon almost. But what's interesting is that they said that they saw it cross the road. So the descriptions of it being, you know, 25 feet long with a long, narrow neck, and being 4 feet high, sort of coincide with the descriptions of Nessie in the water, but it's really interesting that one of the first ones was actually a land creature that I think it ended up crossing the road and going into the waters, but apparently whatever they saw was on the road. And then later on in August 1933, an individual named Arthur Grant, who was a veterinary student, he claimed to have almost hit a creature while driving along the northeastern shore of Loch Ness. He said that it did go back into the loch, and he described it as being a hybrid of a seal and a plesiosaur. So I think that this was an interesting one, because this was an actual, like, this was somebody who was trained in observing animals, and he was actually able to describe it as a very specific type of dinosaur, which is the plesiosaur, and I'm going to go into more detail about that later, because the plesiosaur is probably the most popular explanation for what Nessie is, if it actually exists. And then in 1938, the Chief Constable William Fraser of Inverness wrote a letter saying that the monster did indeed exist. And apparently a hunting party went out there, and they had arrived with harpoons that were specifically intended to catch the monster at all costs. And in this letter, Chief Constable expressed his doubt in his ability to protect the animal, because he said, you know, there's people that are coming out here, and they have these specialized weapons, and he didn't know if he could protect it, but he said that it definitely exists. And this letter was released by the Scottish archives in April of 2010. In May 1943, an individual named C.B. Farrell from the Royal Observer Corps said that he spotted the creature from 250 yards away, and he said that it was a large finned creature. He said it was 20 to 30 feet long, and that it had a neck that protruded 4 to 5 feet out of the water. So with all these sightings, you have to have that frame of reference of size and distance. And if you misjudge the size, or if you misjudge the distance, you're going to misjudge the size. So for somebody to be able to say from 250 yards away that something was 20 to 30 feet long, I don't know how easy that is to do. That's very difficult to tell how big something is from that far away. And that's one thing that I've been having difficulty as I've looked at these pictures and these videos, is that sometimes there's not a frame of reference of size. So you can't tell, you know, is this thing actually as big as it looks, or is it just like, is the picture being taken from very close, which makes it look bigger? And then in 1954, there was actually a sonar contact that was made by a boat called Rival 3. And the readings that it got were of a large object that was keeping pace with the boat at a depth of 480 feet. And it was detected for half a mile. And that's an interesting one. Like, it was able to tell that it was a very large object. It was very, very far underwater, and it was swimming at a good speed. So, it could have been probably some other kind of aquatic animal, but it was something that was keeping pace with the boat. Okay, so here are some of the photographs and films that have been taken of Nessie that have really become popular over time, because I think that this is, now that I'm thinking about it, perhaps one of the reasons why Sasquatch and Nessie are the face of cryptozoology is because of the video and pictures that have come to be very famous of them. Of course, with Sasquatch, we have the Patterson-Gimlin film, which is either proof of Sasquatch or it's one of the greatest hoaxes in history. I will tell you, some of the photographs and films that have been made of Nessie are known hoaxes. Some of them haven't been determined if they're real or fake yet, but there's these pictures that you see. Like, I mean, probably in your mind you can picture like these actual photos that have been taken of Nessie supposedly that are so popular, and that might be one of the reasons that they're the face of this realm of study, is because of the dubious photographic evidence that exists of them. So the real like beginning of the photography of Nessie started in 1933, like a lot of these other stories about Nessie. It was on November 12th of 1933, an individual named Hugh Gray took a picture of a creature that it's very blurry. It looks like it's splashing in the water. You can look up all of these pictures, I would say. Just, you know, look up Hugh Gray Nessie picture and you can find it. It'll make more sense to, like, actually see what it looks like. It appears to have a long tail and a thick body. It also seems that there's, like, stumpy objects that might look like flippers. Some critics say that it's a dog that's swimming. And, like I said, there's no reference point to how big it is. So, it's just this being in a frame, and it's extremely non-conclusive, but you could see it as being a picture of Nessie, kind of, if you wanted to, really. And this was the first known image. In 1934, there was a picture that is known as the Surgeon's Photograph that has become very famous in the study of the Loch Ness Monster. It depicts a head and neck of sort of, you know, this, it's got the long neck that's associated with Nessie, and sort of the serpentine head. And this was in 1934. It was taken by an individual named Dr. Robert Kenneth Wilson, who was a London gynecologist. And this really established the Loch Ness Monster popularity, because this picture was widely you know, distributed, and I think that this is probably the picture that you see when you're thinking of Nessie. But it was revealed to be a fake by the Sunday Telegraph in December 7th of 1974. And basically, what happened is it was a toy submarine that was being, you know, driven around. You can actually see this white object towing it around. And there's very small ripples around it, as opposed to big ripples, which would be what would be caused by the Loch Ness Monster. And so the object was revealed to be actually quite small in the picture. And again, that ties into this point of reference that I've been talking about. But one of the researchers who uncovered the hoax, Alistair Boyd, is a believer in Nessie. He thinks that's real. But he says, you know, just because this has been proven as being a fake doesn't mean the entire phenomena is fake. And then in 1960, there's this thing called the Dinsdale film. And I think that this one is pretty interesting in as far as all of the videos and photographs go. This was in 1960. He was hunting for Nessie, and he saw a small hump coming out of the water. You can look it up online, and it's in black and white. It's very grainy. It's very hard to tell what it is. It's, like a lot of these, it's not conclusive. Nothing is really emerging from the waters, but it's kind of like this big sort of wake that's going along the surface. Skeptics say that it's a boat. I don't know how they really are getting that, because at least when I watched it, it looked like it was, you know, below water at least. But it has kind of a long stream behind it, so you can imagine it being this kind of serpentine figure, like Nessie is said to be. But it's not conclusive evidence, especially because it's in black and white. It makes it hard to discern. But I would say look that up and, you know, see for yourself what it looks like, because I think that's really one of the most interesting ones. And also, I will say, you know, you have to think about the individuals that are getting these videos themselves And that's the same for all of cryptozoology. Because if it's a person who is purposefully out there trying to gather evidence of the creature, it will seem that makes it very, very questionable. I tend to prefer individuals who just stumble upon it and weren't in the first place, you know, known to be into cryptozoology. So if I ever come out and say that I've got video of, you know, Sasquatch or whatever, you're gonna have to be like, hey, you know, this guy is a known cryptozoologist. We got to take a look at how he actually got this video. But I hope that I do get video of Sasquatch one day and that it's real and authentic. But anyway, that's the Dinsdale film. And then skip ahead all the way to May 26th of 2007. There is the Holmes video. And this was captured by a man named Gordon Holmes. He said that the creature in the video that he captured was 45 feet in length. And again, in this one, the creature never breaks the surface. Adrian Shine, who is a marine biologist and part of the Loch Ness Project, I think it's called, he says that it's the best footage he's ever seen. If you've watched a documentary about the Loch Ness Monster, you've probably seen this individual, Adrian Shine. He is, he might be the coolest person I've ever seen in my entire life, to be quite honest with you. He's got this sick beard. He looks like a wizard. He's got this dope Scottish accent. And he's very, you know, he's very scholarly in the way he talks. He sounds very, very smart. And it's because he is very smart. He's a marine biologist, and he's got to be the foremost expert on Nessie, and it's because he's actually trying to study the biology of the lake to determine if it's even possible what type of creatures could live in there. Some people say that it's an otter or a seal or a water bird in this video. To me, it looks like an otter, to be quite honest with you. And there's other ones that look like otters actually. And then this individual, Gordon Holmes, he has reported multiple sightings of cryptid creatures, and he sells a self-published book about fairies. So that's kind of what I was talking about. He's got a very sketchy past. And so I take the Holmes video with an extreme grain of salt. And then there was a sonar image in August 24th, 2011, by an individual named Marcus Atkinson, who was a local boat skipper who captured a sonar image of the strange object. It kind of looks a little bit serpentine. Skeptics say that it's a bloom of algae, but people who sort of counter that claim say that algae need light and that Loch Ness is very dark, so that doesn't really make sense. But again, it's kind of blobby. There's really no telling what it is, to be honest. And then an individual named George Edwards in 2011, November 2nd of 2011, published a photo. He ended up publishing the photo in 2012, but he took this photo in 2011, and it's a hump coming out of the water. And this individual, he spends 60 hours a week on his boat, which is the Nessie Hunter 4. So again, this is a person who is really, really trying to prove Nessie is real. Which, I mean, you know, there's upsides and downsides to it. Like, if anybody's going to get a picture of Nessie, it's a person that spends 60 hours a week on their boat on Loch Ness, right? But he had this photo verified by U.S. military monster experts, which, you know, I don't know that there is such a thing. I mean, I would never join the military, personally, but if I did, definitely I would be a monster expert. I think that goes without saying. He says that it looks like a manatee, but people say that it's a fiberglass hump that was used in a National Geographic documentary that George Edwards was in himself. and he was known to have faked a photo in 1986. And this one to me is actually the one that looks like an otter. You can look it up. It definitely looks like an otter. So those are some of the main photographic and video sightings of it. There's also 1,500-year-old carvings in the Scottish Highlands that look like they're actually depicting the Loch Ness Monster. So I would also advise you to look up that, because they're pretty interesting as well. So there's also been quite a good deal of searches that have been enacted to look for the Loch Ness Monster. There was the Sir Edward Mountain Expedition in 1934, in which 20 men were with binoculars. They basically stationed themselves at the beach, and they were there for 9 hours a day for 5 weeks. There is the Loch Ness Phenomena Investigation Bureau, was created in 1962, and it lasted until 1972. It was a club which required an annual fee, and there was about 1,000 members prevalent in the group in 1969. And so this is just kind of an overview for you guys to know, like, all of the expeditions that have been launched to look for the Loch Ness Monster, because that's also a very big part of it. As opposed to, you know, hunting, or like not hunting, but looking for Sasquatch, which, I mean, it could be anywhere. It's out in the mountains somewhere. The Loch Ness Monster has a focalized area where it's said to go. So it's, you know, a more contained environment. So there's actually been more, scientific endeavors that have been launched to try and actually locate it. And I think the main reasons why it's been searched after so much is, one, because it's in this area, it's in a very, you know, controlled environment, and two, that it's said that it's not paranormal. It might be like, you know, a remnant of a dinosaur or something like that. So this could be a very physical specimen, and if you were able to find it, it would be an absolute phenomenon, obviously. So between 1967 and 1968, there was the LNPIB sonar study. This was headed by Professor Gordon Tucker from the Department of Electronic and Electrical Engineering at the University of Birmingham in England. And what they did is they fixed this sonar reader at the Temple Pier at Loch Ness and pointed it to the other side of the loch. So everything that would pass through it would get picked up. And they ended up spotting a large object that was moving at 10 knots, which is about 12 miles an hour. So, you know, again, that's obviously not proof, but they did see something large. And then there was the big expedition in 1970, which was headed by an individual named Roy McCall, who was a biologist who taught at the University of Chicago. And they used hydrophones, which are underwater microphones, and they ended up picking up sounds of an animal using echolocation to get its prey. So that's interesting. And then there was these Robert Rhine studies. And he was a cryptozoologist who carried out four different studies in 1972, 1975, 2001, and 2008. So there's some of these people that they get on the Nessie track and they just stay on it for years. In the 1970s, he obtained underwater photographs. And to me, these are the best evidence, if they're real, of Nessie's existence, because they're grainy and it looks like a plesiosaur. And, you know, this image, along with the surgeon's photograph, are the ones that are most often associated with the Loch Ness Monster. Look it up, and it has a definite shape to it. It's grainy, but it's very, very interesting. And this led to, in 1975, a British naturalist named Peter Scott announced the name of Nessateris rhomboterix, which was the scientific name that he was giving to Nessie, and it means the Ness Monster with the diamond-shaped fin. But then a Scottish politician named Nicholas Fairbairn pointed out that this name is an anagram for Monster Hoax by Peter S. So what an anagram is it's a word that also contains another word. Like if you move around the letters of Nesoteris Roboterix, you can also spell Monster Hoax by Sir Peter S. It's sort of like in Harry Potter, how Lord Voldemort is also an anagram for Tom Marvolo Riddle, something like that. It's basically that same idea. And these photos haven't been completely debunked, as far as I can tell. And then there's also Operation Deep Scan, which was launched in 1987, and 24 boats were deployed with Echo Sounder equipment, and they made contact with a large unidentified object of unusual size and strength. So again, you know, they're doing these projects and they make contact with something large, but still it hasn't been definitively proven that it's Nessie that's, you know, making these sounds or that is actually in the pictures. And then, like I mentioned, there's this individual named Adrian Shine. He's, you know, kind of who I want to be one day. Well, actually, no, I don't want to be a marine biologist, but I'd like to be, you know, I'd like to have a pretty sweet beard and talk the way that he does, at least if I could. He heads the Loch Ness Project. It's been going on for 30 years. Basically, what he was doing, he was looking for zooplankton. And zooplankton are these very, very minuscule fish. And his thought process that if he found zooplankton, it would indicate a food chain that was present in Loch Ness, and he did end up finding them. So a food chain definitely could exist for the Loch Ness monster to exist. And then in 1993, there was this thing called Discovery Loch Ness, which was launched, and it focused on the ecology of the loch, and they caught 20 fish with one catch, which increased the estimates of the fish population in Loch Ness ninefold. And so, again, it's entirely possible that a biological specimen like the Loch Ness monster could exist in the loch, to my understanding. I mean, I don't have a great knowledge of marine biology, but apparently, you know, a food chain could exist for it to be able to live. And during this Discovery Loch Ness, there's also three sonar contacts that were made with powerful wakes that could have been created by a very large creature. And then in 2003, the BBC funded what was called Searching for the Loch Ness Monster. They used 600 sonar beams and satellite tracking, and they didn't find any animal of substantial size, unfortunately. But that was one of the biggest projects that has been, sort of enacted in recent history. A lot of these are still undergoing, but I wouldn't be surprised if they have another very large search for the Loch Ness Monster coming up soon. You just need to have the right funding, and at this point of time, it probably would be a television program doing it as opposed to, a scientific organization or some kind of government entity, because it's very popular in television culture. Okay, so let's go into some of the theories that have been put forth to explain what the Loch Ness Monster is, if it exists. So probably the most prevalent, the most accepted theory is that it's a plesiosaur. So a plesiosaur was a ocean-faring dinosaur that existed, it appeared first in the Triassic period, which was roughly 206 million years ago, and it became common in the Jurassic period, and eventually they became extinct due to the Cretaceous extinction event approximately 66 million years ago. So, you know, like the Gigantopithecus being the explanation of Sasquatch, the The Loch Ness Monster is associated with an ancient creature that we've known to exist, but also has apparently been extinct for a very, very long time. There was a worldwide distribution of these plesiosaurs. Like the depictions of Loch Ness Monster, they had large, long necks, a tiny head, and flippers for propulsion. Scientists say that this explanation is unlikely. Some of the things that they point to is that there would be a need for a breeding colony for long-term survival, so it would be more obvious that there's plesiosaurs living in a lake if they did. Also, plesiosaurs, they had to come to the surface to breathe, like crocodiles, so there would be more sightings because they had to come to the surface. They say that the loch isn't large or productive enough. Also, the fact that it was frozen solid for so long makes it very, very difficult. What would have had to happen for the plesiosaur to exist in the loch is that there would have been a window of time where the loch had basically opened up. Like there would have been a path in the river from the ocean into the loch after the ice age ended. Also, plesiosaurs were cold-blooded and they needed tropical waters to survive. So, this isn't Scotland. This is cold water that's up there. And sort of similarities between the two and how they looked, I think, is why the plesiosaur is so often associated with theories about the Loch Ness Monster. Another thing that I think is interesting is a phenomenon called pareidolia. And so what this is it's the tendency to interpret a stimulus as something that's known to the observer. And so pareidolia comes up in, you know, seeing shapes in clouds, seeing faces in inanimate objects. People say they see faces on the Cydonia region of Mars. That one might actually be possible, but maybe I'll save that for another time. The man on the moon, and then like the Rorschach test where there's like these ink blobs and you see sort of what your mind wants you to see in them. People might be seeing, a boat wake or a log or something like that out in the ocean or out in Loch Ness, and their mind is saying that it's the monster. And especially, you know, if you go out there looking for the Loch Ness Monster, your mind will be quick to see it, in things that aren't actually animate. Another one of the explanations is that it's just mundane objects that are appearing. It could be seals or fish such as sturgeon. It could be mirages or, like I said, boat wakes or logs. Also, there might be disruptions in the water because of minor volcanic activity that's located at the bottom of the loch because of its location on the fault. Back in the day, you know, there was traveling circuses and they were known to let elephants play in lakes. So some of those early sightings might actually have been elephants, and the head would have been like the head and the neck of Loch Ness Monster would have been the trunk of the elephant. 7-foot eels were found on the Loch Ness shore in 2001. And it also could just be reiteration of Scottish folklore and Kelpie legends. So Kelpies are shape-shifting water spirits that are said to inhabit the Scottish lochs. And they're said to have horse-like heads. So Kelpie legends are very, very similar to the stories are told about the Loch Ness Monster, so there might be something there as well. Well, that's all for today's show. The legends of Nessie have captivated the minds of people interested in cryptozoology and the paranormal for over 80 years, and it shows no sign of slowing down. But perhaps as science advances, we will have the technology to plunge to the depths of the loch and find out once and for all if there actually is a beast lurking somewhere beneath. Beast Lore is available on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to follow me on social media at USU Folklore on Twitter and at Archaic Futurism on Instagram. We'll see you next time. Thanks for listening.